You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi, Hotep family. Hope you are well today. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, and can do, and will do this weekend or today or any other day. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, I know you'll get it done anyway. But if you don't have to, remember, stay safe, stay home, keep your distance, wear a mask, wash your hands. It's serious. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page is podcast. Click on that, and there will be, the drop down will be African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. I'm going to give the lineup that we have. I'm not going to go through the announcements, and I'm going to read the Inye Sesim and play some promo for the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Then I'm going to introduce my guests, and we're going to get off into the conversation, and you can join us by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. And then at 9 p.m. on Monday, every first and third Monday, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, After 7 with host Shani B. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays at 4 p.m. from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturday, Sankofa, the Elders Council, hosted by Alfonso Watkins. And Sunday from 7 p.m., time for an awakening. Once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. October 8th. Indigenous people experience life holistically and integratively. Everything that is thought, said, and done is done in relationship to the whole of life and world. Simbuli Mosha. To be at one with the all is to be at one with ourselves. To affect all is to affect ourselves. Our ancestors were quite aware whatever they thought and did had an effect in the universe, and that effect would return to them and their people in time. They knew that internal and external peace brought peace to the universe, and in turn, it returned that peace to them. Discord and disharmony, of course, had the opposite effect. They realized that, although proportionally they were physically insignificant in the scheme of universal things, they had a significant effect on the temper of the universe because they were connected to all things and therefore affected all things through
their thoughts and actions. They realize that you can change reality by changing yourself. They realize that people chose their mission before physical birth and chose to think these thoughts and produce these actions that either fulfilled or determined it or undermined it. They knew that nothing thought, said, or done was meaningless. Everything is involved in everything. This was their supreme knowledge. And in knowing, allowed us to express our genius and create reality in ways still unimaginable to others. Yet, having removed us from the knowledge of who and what we are, what we know and what we know, Europeans are now pretending that this is their discovery. Affirm, I see the universe as one. Affirm, I see the universe as one. October 9th. Around my way, around my way, all the corners filled with sorrow, all the streets are filled with pain. Around my way, Talib Kweli. Many of our warriors are confined to the worst of this dehumanizing cesspool of a reality. They are subject to places unfit for human habitation, yet they survive and are strengthened by the struggle of battling against insurmountable odds. In these places, those who do not meet death or get lost in prisons or chemicals and concrete go on to stand as some of the best models of warriorhood we could ever hope to produce. It is no secret that many of our best revolutionary work leaders came through the gauntlet of these abysmal war zones. Silver spoons, whether received at birth or later in the oppressor's institutions, tend to produce spiritually anemic, morally corrupted through charismatic vocalists deeply in debt to lesser gods. But the village ghetto lands teach one to have no fear of want or death. There are imitated consequences. When raised in this way, enemies have nothing you want or need, and death is no different than life. For those in the company of wise African minds who act on their responsibilities to rear them into consciousness and an awareness of their power, life becomes a vision of liberation for African people where no cost is too great. In these places, the calluses that grow on one's mind, body, and soul give defense against the violence of an unsympathetic alien world. And the way these calluses are built instills fearlessness into the character of the warriors around my way. Affirm, difficulty strengthens me. Affirm, difficulty strengthens me. October 10th. Any action, regardless of its motives, is sterile unless it produces practical and concrete results. I'm called Gabral. To become independently African, we must do what is necessary and never concern ourselves unreasonably with the actions of others. We must act as if we must answer, to and only answer to our ancestors, our children, and the unborn. We must act as if this is our testing ground, as if what we righteously do here will determine whether we will be honored as warrior scholars or dismissed as traitors when we make our transition and are judged. Obviously, this is not easy to step out and be African. What semblance of security we feel quickly disappears, and the only lifelines that appear to be dangling before us are those which will pull us straight back into chaos. Yet, we know that nothing is impossible. We have been taught this. We have witnessed this. So we know that being independently African requires more than a conscious and committed state of mind. It requires us to do more than say we will do what we must do and do it. We must take the time to daily ask ourselves, if an African thinks victoriously, what does an act on these thoughts? Will anything be accomplished? Revolution requires revolutionary thoughts which have not been disarmed by selfish mortal fears to be acted upon. It is the action which directly and uncompromisingly flows through these thoughts, which produces results. Affirm, every act I commit is productive for African people. Affirm, every act I commit is productive for African people. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. This comes from the Pan-African Federalist Movement's on WhatsApp. And boy, they have a whole lot of good stuff on WhatsApp. And I really appreciate Brother Sangor, who's going to be on in a minute. And of course, Brother Mwali Mu Mstada and Sister Mama Nabantu and all the brothers and sisters in the Pan-African Federalist Movement, which of course I'm one. So I'm going to play these two promotional pieces.
We have a buying power. We have a buying power of $1.2 trillion. But what are we doing with it? The Regional Coordinating Committee for the Pan-African Federalist Movement in North America invites you to the North American Pan-African Federalist Convention. This year's theme is African Political Unity for Sovereignty and Upliftment. So join us as we take action and prepare for the Global Pan-African Conference. Live, October 15th to 19th, via Zoom. Register now at eventbrite.com/Pan-African Federalist Convention.
And as you can, sorry for the little mix up there, but that's what we're planning and that's what we're going to do. I'm looking forward to it very much so. And that's next weekend, brothers and sisters. That's next weekend, next week, Thursday, and I'm going to play this next piece because this is a good promotional piece in terms of what these brothers and sisters are doing. Let me find it here. It's coming up shortly. And don't tell me I passed it. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes that happens.
There is a lot of talk of late on the African continent about the fact that Africans are awaking. There is a lot of talk about the fact that we are woke. But the question that I'd like to ask you is, almost 100 years ago, a man called Marcus Garvey rose and told Africans that they must unite. Unite in their control of resources. Unite as nations. Unite their imaginations, their dreams, aspirations, and capabilities to grow in Africa and a race that will be able to self-determine and compete against other races. A man called Kwame Nkrumah came and said the same message. And another by the name of Malcolm X said the same. But the question is, after almost a century since the rise of Marcus Garvey, has Africa achieved unity? Do we control our resources? Do we unite in our aspirations, dreams? And have we elevated Africa into a continent and a race that can compete and self-determine against other races? The truth of the matter is we have failed. We have failed because we have remained divided. We've continued to work as 54 different states that continue to be subjugated. This is why the French continue to have 14 colonies on the African continent. It is why 36 African countries have got American bases and AFRICOM on their soil. It is why many African countries continue to sell their resources, their institutions, for debt to countries like China. And the question that I'm now challenging you, the woke generation, with is, what are we going to do about it? The reason we've got wars on the African continent is because we're being divided for conquest. The reason we've got sanctions on the African continent is that all the independent knowledge and education, the power to take control of our resources, can be destroyed so that Africa can continue to be colonized by our Western colonizers. This is why now we need to rise. Remember that you, the African American, with all your paper money, the greatest wealth among all black nations, only have paper money, but the true wealth is in Africa. The true wealth is the reason why Africa is under sanctions and war, the one that Europeans want to keep for themselves. You need to bring your paper money, your skill, your knowledge, your frustration back to Africa to invest it in the control of real wealth and real resources in the form of the oil, the diamonds, chrome, lithium, cassiterite, and all the other resources that the Western worlds are fighting to control in Africa. Your paper money can be leveraged into machines, skills, technology, and the knowledge that Africa needs in order to move and prosper. You, the Caribbean, with your skill, power, determination, you, the Jamaican, the first people to resist European colonialism, you, the Haitian, the very first black peoples to defeat a European army, you are the answer to Africa's problems. You, the European African, with all that you've learned and earned, the basketball player, the soccer player, the sportsman, the singer, the musician, the actor, with all your billions of dollars, are the investment that Africa needs to stop its dependency on the colonizer. It's about time that we rose. And I'm saying that Marcus Garvey's dream can be fulfilled, because when he dreamt it, not a single country, not a single African country was independent. When he dreamt it, not many black billionaires existed, if any. But today we've got black billionaires. Today the richest man in Africa is a black man. We have what it takes and the capacity that it takes to grow our continent into being a continent that can be respected, can self-determine, control its resources, control the processing of those resources, and create currencies based on those resources to be the leading economy in the world. With that, we can industrialize, grow up the technology curve, and begin to create the machinery, the tools to defend the sovereignty of this continent. And now I say it's time that we unite. We have countries like Zimbabwe under U.S. war sanctions to make it unattractive for any African to come, because Europeans are preserving it for themselves. But I'm inviting you, my African-American brother, you Africans in the diaspora, you Africans on the continent, to say, come and take advantage of the greatest reserves of lithium, chrome, gold, true wealth, land, an opportunity to develop infrastructure for us to create wealth as a people, for yourselves, for the advancement of Africa. The time to awake is now, but awakening takes action, pride, investment, development, innovation to give our people power. This is the time.
Now is the time, dear brothers and sisters. Now is the time. It's been that. Africa must unite now. I'm going to welcome Brother Sangor from the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Good morning, dear brother.
Yes, good morning, my good brother Oshi, and greetings to all the listeners of African Perspectives, and great morning, great messages. It's a pleasure to be here with you, brother Oshi.
I thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. You know I do.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I do. and I hear it in your voice, and I'm just it's just great the love that is being projected by many of us who are Pan-Africanists who have been at this for a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's all a part of our Blacktricity.
That's right. Blacktricity is in all African people, north, south, west. And now we got to bring that Blacktricity, which is our ancient DNA, back to our traditional greatness.
That's
and
right.
That's a task.
Yeah.
But it's taking place. It's taking place. We just need to accelerate.
Exactly. Because the time is now. Now, man. Because, you know, when I look at what's happening on the continent, and it just saddens me, you know, particularly I was in Ghana last year, and, you know, the number of Chinese that are there.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And they're talking about 300 million Chinese to be relocated on the continent. 300 million. You got Chinese marrying African women. You know, you got some Chinese, because they made a project or whatever, have been given kingships, you know? It's crazy, man. So we got, you know, so the time is now, you know?
Yes,
so,
it is. Yes,
so,
it is. And
Go ahead. No, you go ahead, brother.
No, it's absolutely now. And, you know, culture vultures are all over the place, as you said, because they understand the cradle of civilization is the African continent. The reality is too many of our Africans outside of Africa as well as in Africa haven't come to realize how great our ancestral participation in global functioning was longer than we've been oppressed. Mm-hmm. And it's a task getting brothers and sisters who have been separated, who have been brainwashed, as you said earlier, many who still act as slaves mentally. It's a task. But I'm happy to say the Pan-African Fellas movement is just that. We're not a replacement or an alternative to different other organizations. We are a complement to various different movements and organizations that have been at this for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. We need that. Because we need to come together. I know that next weekend there's a number of other things that are happening, you know, other programs that are happening. And I would like to have stated or like to have seen that we had one program with all of us, you know, going on that one program and getting that information direct and saying this is the direction that we as African people must go for us to be sovereign, for us to be independent and self-determining and liberated. This is what we must do. And these are the things and how we're going to do that, how we're going to do them. And please report back. There's timelines to this. This just ain't we saying something and then you get hyped on it and then it just, that's it. You know,
that's right.
You know, we need
to
hold people accountable. You know,
that's right.
And to say that, hey, this needs to be done by this, because this the time is now. The time is of the essence, you know, when you look at what's happening to us. Go ahead.
Yes, Brother Oshie, you're absolutely on point. And I just want to clarify to all the listeners, it's a campaign that we are taking place and doing just what you said and trying to carousel and pull all of the progressive thinking Pan-Africanist nationalist together. And yes, a lot of things are going on simultaneously. However, we're in the campaign mode, moving to a mobilization mode and moving to an organizing mode, which means the convention has to go on. And despite the fact you have other events going on, we are tapping into some of them, in fact, because we recognize unity with our uniformity is important. However, everybody needs to come to the table that has any way or means to contribute to the upliftment of African people. Because in the final analysis, those of us who are going to be successful, because we are going to be successful in building a united African state, we have to recognize that we have been divided so much that even the progressive elements stay in their own little groups and don't necessarily consolidate the way we need to consolidate. But that change is coming. And I know because I represent quite a few different entities that are building globally, and I saw the need. So I know that those with vision for United African States will eventually come around, despite the fact they might not be at this convention. This convention is designed to lay the groundwork for one region of the Pan-African Fellas movement. And we have over nine regions. But this particular region in North America is the United States and Canada. And I'm just happy to say Canada and those of us that have local organizing committees are doing a tremendous job, because we represent the interests of all Africans. So regardless of how many may be in our convention, and I'm sure we're going to have a nice amount, we need to lay the groundwork. And then because of the technology, because of the pandemic, and as serving as chief field organizer, I have been unable since February to travel around the United States and connect with other organizations and help them see the relevancy and continuing doing what they're doing, but being connected. However, because of technology, like what we're doing right now on the phone and the technology of Zoom and WebEx, we have been able to continue the movement and communicate with brothers and sisters around the world. That's not good enough. What we need to do is to get down in the ground, in the grassroots, with all the people doing great work, and appeal to them and show them the relevancy of what we say during Kwanzaa is Umoja. Not just talk about unity, but to put it into a practical application where it does something, where we can stop some of the police brutality, the lack of us getting respect around reparations, the lack of us being able to become expatriates and repatriate, the issues of imprisonment. And I could go down the line. We have so many issues, as well as being on top of this pandemic. However, the only thing that's going to solve this is not begging Yorugu, the oppressor, but reaching to Africans to show them how much power we had doing ancient Nubia and Kemet, of building tech nukes and pyramids and things of that nature. And we got to get back to using our power, and power concedes to power. Mm-hmm. And we must put pressure on the system of white supremacy. But I'm more inclined to look at the internal aspect of repair and reparation,
yes,
and organize the minds of African people, because we are a majority, never been a minority. And once we have that kind of power to back the correct thinking, we can do whatever we need to do, including having a universal African army to protect ourselves, including building our own agronomy and agricultural ways and means where we can have food, building our own homes, and in short, just being self-reliant and self-determined, and stop worrying about the other fellow, because he is living off of us. We built everywhere, including Europe and America. So the reality is now it's time, as you said, it's past time, but it's time for us to shift the paradigms and to reclaim the continent and to reclaim our Africanity and to take charge of the world. Because even as we organize, the very planet is under attack. The earth itself is under attack. And if we don't change that, it's a possibility, as Garvey said, none of us will be around in the next 50 to 100 years.
Yeah. And that's why it's imperative that we come together. I mean, there's only one place on this planet that we as African people can say, hey, this is ours, and that is Africa. Because, you know, I know we're in the Caribbean. I know we're in Central and South America. I know we're here. But we really can't be independent here. We can't be self-determining here. The European, the Yorugu has all of that, even in the Caribbean. But there's one place on this planet, and that is the original place of humanity, and that is on the continent of Africa. And that's what we must do. We must say to the brothers and sisters there, we are coming home, and we're coming with resources. We're coming with knowledge to share. We're not coming like we did when Liberia was created. We ain't coming with that foolishness, you know, thinking we're better because we tied to Europeans or that divide and conquer that the Europeans was able to instill. We're not coming with that. Yeah. We're coming with the attitude of we're willing to work to develop Africa. Africa needs roads. It needs highways. It needs infrastructure. It needs energy resources. It needs water resources, you know, and all of those things we can do for ourselves.
Yeah. That's right. It needs us. You're absolutely correct. And I know for a fact, and working with a lot of groups that are very supportive of the Pan-African Fellas movement, the Black Star Action Network International, which is a group of younger brothers and sisters around the world, some on the continent, that are doing just that. See, See, the work that's going on needs to be accelerated.
Right.
You hit the nail right on the head. Africa is the cradle of civilization. So why should we be looking to settle anywhere but on the continent? Now, I'm not advocating that all Africans need to go back home, but all Africans need to have a connection. And the Africans who have something to contribute to Africa need to think about returning home to live and to do business and to build.
Right.
That is what happened. That's what the Yorugu did. Is he separated us, not just during the transatlantic slave trade, but carved up the continent during the Berlin Conference to divide us so we would not have the power enough to go up against his ignorance and his negativity. And so consequently, for the last 400, 500, 600 years, we've been under the yoke of the system. I call it white terrorism. Mm-hmm. People call it white supremacy.
Right.
They're not supreme.
They're not.
We're the
Right on.
We're the supreme. We're the cradle of civilization, and all life comes from us. It's just some of the life that came from us became disagreeable beasts and lost their humanity and turned around and hoodwinked us because of our love for all life, not just love for human beings, but love for animals, mm-hmm. love for all life, love mm-hmm. for plant life. We got caught. Now what we need to do is to reverse that with our tough love and come back together again and straighten out all of the shortcomings that happened in our house while they were consistently dividing us and to make us whole again. I like to say our ancestors are waiting and watching. Children are crying mm-hmm. and dying only because of the apathy of African people.
Yes.
That does not mean African people are being the murderers, nor does that mean those that are doing the murdering of each other or have not been programmed away from their Africanity and are left with an animalistic thinking, which means they're actually slaves to Yorugu.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's why we need to wake up.
No question.
We need to wake up now.
Brother Oshie, I'm sorry. We are waking up, but not fast enough.
Yeah.
Like you said, mm-hmm. I mean, and that's why we don't see the multitude of numbers.
Yeah.
And those of us who are in leadership need to come up with practical programs of food, clothing, and shelter mm-hmm. that serve the interests of moving people away from expecting to go to Piggly Wiggly and Safeway and learning how to grow their own food, learning how to address this pandemic in natural ways rather than to be waiting on
right, a vaccine.
A vaccine which is going to be more deadly
mm-hmm.
than probably the virus. And we know the history of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, but the reality is, we know what needs to be done, brothers and sisters, and we need to follow that. I mean, we need to deal with our own health. We need to deal with the wealth. The wealth doesn't mean anything if you have money and you have no consciousness or no compassion to do something positive for African people. So it's really wealth is basically found in knowledge and return to our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, you know, as was said in one of the tapes you played, we got everything we need. We just don't have the unity and are not working together collectively.
That's right, because we don't have the right mind. You know, exactly. We're at war for the minds of our people. It is about the mind. That's why every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., mm-hmm. I run this program. And this program is about independence, self-determination, right. liberation, and sovereignty for African people. There is no other discussion. In fact, the motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, which, of course,
yes.
was a saying by Dr. John Henry Clark. And the finish is yes. unify or die. You know, yes. I remember when... Yes. P. Diddy or whatever the dude's name is, when Barack mm-hmm. ran in 08, they had these T-shirts, vote or die. Hell with vote or die. No, unify or die.
That's right. Well, you know, it's coming to a point for those of us that are conscious where there is no option.
Yes.
That you're going to die.
Yes.
And I'm not afraid of death, and we should not be afraid of death, but we should not be looking to die.
Right.
We should be looking to live.
That
means that we have to do something to address the issue to pass significant things on to the next generation, like Sister Malak Shabazz, the daughter of Malcolm X, who's going to be with us next weekend,
mm-hmm.
like Dr. Leonard Jeffries, who has many, many years of knowledge and much to share, mm-hmm. Attorney Nkechi Taifa,
yes.
A. Peter Bailey, Renoko Rashidi. These brothers and sisters are just our guest speakers, but
right.
they've endorsed the work, and we have artists that have endorsed the work. We're going to be sharing a video by my brother Ross Ledge, which is called All to the East, that was done last year, maybe when you were in Ghana, mm-hmm. and it's called All to the East. So what I'm saying is we have a diverse convention. We have a youth component being led by Brother Sam Collins,
okay.
Sam P.K. Collins, who should be joining us shortly.
Right.
And we have Dr. Orwa, and then we have Joe Beasley. But then we have a host of grassroots organizers of the Pan-African Federalist Movement and other Africans who are going to come together to address three major issues, questions. What does the Campaign for United African States need from African people in North America? And you hit a lot of it, brother, in your opening, because it's critical that we understand the brain drain of Africa. When we lost our mother Africa, Africa lost us as children. So as we return, it's a part of the repairing. So we need to discuss that and come up with strategies of how we change the paradigms that we've been confronted with.
Mm-hmm.
Second, what shall be the expectations of African people in North America from the United African States? So we're not going back just to say we're going to save Africa. We're going back so Africa and ourselves can be saved together.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we need to know, Africa needs to know what we are going to be doing, what do we propose to do to help build the United African States. And lastly, three, how will the rights of African people in North America figure into the Constitution of the United African States? Now, let me just say this real quick, and then I'm gonna come up for air. When we say United African States, we know the Right Excellent Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Kwame Nkrumah, and so many other ancestors were moving for a unified continent. We're not just moving for, a unified continent with Africans building that. We're saying a United African States consists of every African north, south, east, and west of the world. Because the reality is, you said it earlier, there is no other land base, and I'm all about freeing the land. Don't get me wrong,
mm-hmm.
because once we free the land in Africa, we need to free the lands all over the planet. So to my PGRNA brothers and sisters, we love you, and we appreciate all the work you've been doing. To the National Black United Front, to all of the various different progressive groups, we are with you. But we recognize that all the way back, even before the UNIA convention, in the earlier teens of the 20th century, back to the Haitian Revolution, we've always been in a mode of resistance. Now what we're talking about is it's time for us to unify and resist collectively and build up the Africa that we need. Meaning, a United African States means that those Africans in North America will be considered as a state. Those Caribbean people will be considered as a state of Africa. And of course, all of the groups on African continent and the countries, they will be states. But together, we're talking about a unified body with one president, with one army, one military, and one government. That way, we will be able to utilize all of the great contributions that we've made and pull them together to rebuild the continent and move forward to save the planet. I hope I was clear in that, because sometimes people get confused. They think that Africa must unite and then we go home. No, we as Africans must unite and return home.
That's right.
Meaning, regardless to where you are on the planet, you should be working for the independence of the African continent.
That's right. Because, every other people, they gather strength from their homeland. They may be in other parts of the world. They may be here, and some may be here for generations, but they still tie themselves to their home, you know?
Exactly.
They still tie themselves to Japan or China or any country in Europe. They're still Italian. It's like, the Italians still get pissed pretty soon because, they've been doing away with Columbus Day, even though.
And that's why all of these people are in Africa. You mentioned, A. Peter Bailey used to always say back in the days of El Hajj, Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X, they used to say, you don't have a Chinaman's chance. Well, now China, has reversed that.
Yeah.
And now they even in Africa.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Because they got problems in China.
Yeah.
The resources that are needed in China are in Africa.
That's right.
And the resources the whole world needs are in Africa. So why Africans on the continent are not on the top of the rung and not on the bottom. Mm-hmm. That's because of the exploitation, the colonialism and neocolonialism, and we got to change that. We got to do away with Yorugu, and we got to once and for all wipe out white terrorism.
Yeah, and we got to do away with the enemy within, the neocolonialists, the despots, those traitors. We got to do. We have to deal with that, you know?
Yes. Well, you hit the nail on the head. See, white terrorism is perpetrated, as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing and Neely Fuller have taught us so well, by many of our own people who don't understand. If you don't understand, as they say, white supremacy, then you don't understand anything. And the reality is many African people have been brainwashed, whitewashed, to think that Mr. Charlie got stuff going on, when in reality, Mr. Charlie didn't build anything. We built it all. And the reality is we should be on the top of the rung, not on the bottom of the rung, anywhere. And until we understand that, the ancient Kemet, ancient Nubia, is a civilization that was built to remind us of how great we can be. Even to this day, we settle for projects. When in our Blacktricity, we had the ability to build technutes and pyramids. Mm-hmm. So we have to rise above that and stop renting or living in projects owned and controlled by Yorugu, and begin to build our own homes and get back to our traditional greatness. Now, a lot of people say, well, how can you do that? Well, how did they do what they did? I mean, let's be realistic about it. They came into Africa bearing gifts and exploited Africa and took many of us out of Africa. We can reverse that. We can reverse, Marcus Garvey said, in 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, if enough of us think the same way.
Is that right? It's the mind. It. Exactly. It's the mind. Yeah.
You're right, brother. You're mm-hmm. right. You're absolutely correct. So mm-hmm. the Pan-African Fellas movement is appealing to everybody to know that we're working on it for the interests of everybody. And we've been caught up for years in different ideological and philosophical approaches. But if you're doing something great for Africans, you need to be at the table. Now, the reality is that once we get to Africa to set up the United African States, our Congress there, you know, there'll be a lot of differences at the table, but we need to be able to learn how to disagree without being disagreeable.
Right.
And to work to build what we want for our children. And stop being so selfish. Mm-hmm. You know, the Yorugu has taught our African people to think selfishly. Yeah. I got to get mine. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get your own.
Right.
No, we got to get away from that individuality.
That's right.
We got to go back to the collective. If you hungry, I should be hungry. Mm-hmm. If you eating, I should be eating. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. There's no such thing as I'm eating and then I got some people that are hungry. I mean, that's individuality. That's that Yorugu mm-hmm. foolishness to keep us divided. You know, Yorugu don't even take care of his own people. So yeah. why would we think that they're going to take care of us?
That's right.
The reality is that's not in their nature.
That's right.
You know, they've lost their natural Blacktricity, you know, and have shown us that by how they've treated us, not only doing the so-called transatlantic slave trade, but Jim Crow. And look at what the hell is happening today.
Today.
We're still begging Mr. Charlie to stop killing our brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
We need to take up and defend ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, straight up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to call it just like it is. I'm an advocate for self-determination and self-defense. And at some point, when your children and your women are being killed, you got to get up and do something serious.
That's right.
And not expect the police to be rehabilitated. You need to become your own police.
Well, that's why there's many people who are agreeing with the, you know, we ain't fucking around coalition.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Because, I mean, look, brother, you hit the net. Well, see what's happening, Ocean, I know you understand, is our ancestors are coming through us. Our ancestors are pushing us, and you will see good things taking place everywhere. That's why it's so important for all the different things taking place, whether or not it's self-defense, whether or not it's economic development with our great group, us lifting us, whether or not it's reparations internally and externally. Whatever it is, it needs to be unified.
That's right.
To be supportive of
yes.
all African people.
Yes.
Because we got Africans in South America that's being brutalized every day and mm-hmm. have been for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that we should not recognize the brutalization taking place in North America, but we need to recognize that we're being marginalized, abused, killed, and murdered all over the world because we not haven't stood up and said enough is enough. And as Marcus Garvey told the Ku Klux Klan, there's more trees in Africa than in North America, so you better watch yourself. And that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, we because of what the European has done and putting into our minds and imposed a system, that's what it is. It is a yes. system that they have imposed yes. upon us of defamation, denial, and destruction of us as a people through history and writing and culture. You know, they impose their culture on us. And that culture, being the alien culture that it is, makes us think and behave in certain ways that we hate ourselves. We hate our hair. We hate our skin. We hate our lips. You know, we hate each other. You know, there's the mentality that we don't want to support one another. We don't want to share. It's deep that in today, in 2020, about 40 some years ago, we have more businesses that we've had to now back then. Mm-hmm. We have mm-hmm. more of us were together, more of us family, a better family institution of men, a man and a woman married with some children, more so than today. Mm-hmm. But today we are so fragmented and so individualized, as you point out, that it's very hard. So, I mean, what we're talking about, Brother Sangor, is going to be very difficult, but it must be done. We have Absolutely. To organize. It's going to be difficult, but it must be done because we got the agent provocateurs, all these Negroes yes. that are out there. And like I'm saying, we're going to make, to me, we make the clarion call of us to come mm-hmm. together. When that right. brothers and sisters make that call and we come together, those, just like Dr. Clark said, either you're going to be in the house or That's you're right. going to be out the house. We make the clarion That's call right. to come in the house. This is who we're working with. On the continent and throughout the diaspora, that's what we're going with. Because even like Marcus Garvey said, not all of us are going to go because some of us ain't no damn good here and we ain't going to be no Absolutely. Damn good there. So you can keep your Absolutely. Ass here. You know, that's if you right. want to, if this is what you want, you stay. But we, right. there was a great segment of us that must go. Now, for those who understand that, whatever reasons that tie you here for that reason, but support it. Send your yes. money, put some resources in it, support it. You can still be here.
Right. And, support it. When Africa, as you said, brother, when Africa is united and under its own control, it can protect the interests of Africans everywhere. In the world.
That's
and
right.
that's very important. You said it the right way. You know, and that's why it's critical for us to recognize why the Pan-African Fellas movement have come up. Like Sheikh Anta Diop guided us to set up. And, you know, mm-hmm. people say, well, we don't want to be no federal. Well, see, people are caught up in Eurocentric Yorugu definitions and not African definitions.
Right.
We need to be African-centered. We're not talking about Eurocentric federalism. I mean, and they did use that to get the United States set up. But mm-hmm. the reality is we're talking about returning to our ancient cultural roots. And in returning to our ancient cultural roots, forget about Yorugu. I mean, the reality is neocolonialism will be smashed once we're united.
Mm-hmm.
And that calls for removing some of the arrogance that exists with leadership of people who look like you and me. If they're acting like Yorugu, despite the fact they're African, they got to be removed as well.
Right.
If they're not providing food, clothing, and shelter for the population of their people, they got to be removed. I mean, if we haven't woken up enough to political corruption with this great joke that's going on with the so-called demonocracy in America now with 45 and all.
Yeah, it's crazy, ain't it? It's crazy.
If you're not waking up now, I mean, you got to understand capitalism is falling. And when it falls, those bricks will fall on us if we don't get up from under it and build our own empire. And that's what we have to do. If Marcus Garvey and the UNIA 100 years ago could organize millions of people, if we could come together in 1995, which I'm going to be doing a memorial
Million
to the
Man
Million
March.
Man March.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we could come together with 2.5 million brothers here in Washington, D.C. on the mall, We can do anything. And you, I was there. I helped organize. Mm-hmm. And I know, and people talk about that. We let that energy get away, but it sent a wake-up call to Yorugu that we were coming of age. Mm-hmm. Now, today, we cannot afford to be afraid. When we had Malcolm, we had Lumumba, we had Nkrumah.
Oh, boy. Somehow we lost connection. I'm going to come out and come back in if you can hear me. Boy, damn it.
Lock in with us. Go to our website, www.cbpm.org/PAFMNORAM. Register, sign the petition, check out the call. We're not asking you to pay no dues. You understand? The dues that we want you to pay is bringing your knowledge, bringing your skills, bringing your ability to do something, because everybody can do something.
Right. Right.
And that's very important, Brother Oshie. Just like what you're doing with this show is critical.
Well, you know,
because if we don't have our own media, we're gonna be listening to their story again.
Well, you know, I'm a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement.
I know you are.
Oh yeah, but I'm saying it to say that I honestly and righteously want to pay dues. I honestly and righteously want to register for the conference. I want to do whatever part that I can play to making the reality of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, bringing it to an existence now. You know, that's why I'm saying that, you know, I play what you heard, that piece that you sent out over the WhatsApp, you know, the 30-second commercial as well as that 6-minute piece. I play it all the time. And that's what we talk about, because, yes, some may argue, well, you're playing it all the time. But, yeah, it's positive reinforcement. You need to hear it all the time, because hopefully by hearing it all the time, you understand what your responsibility and obligation is to making it happen, making it a reality. Well, we're at the top of the hour, Brother Sangor. I'm going to go to a break.
Okay.
And when I come back from the break, and Brother Sam is on, so we're going to talk to Brother Sam Collins along with yourself, and we're going to ask the listeners to chime in at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. Very important conversation. We need to make this happen now. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
for our motherland. Black is for the far black man. Black is for the beautiful things of a far and beautiful race. Black is for the soul we need, so our nation we can be. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Roy Ayers, Red, Black, and Green. And 2000's Got to Be Black. He made that in 1970, 50 years ago.
Yep.
50 questions we need to ask ourselves. Where are we 50 years later when he said that? That's the thing. Brother Sam Collins, are you with me?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, dear brother. How are you this afternoon?
Can't complain. You know, I'm just doing my best.
Right on.
That's all you can do.
Is Brother Sanghor, are you still with me?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right.
Sir, I'm with you. Oshi.
Because I lost my board here. You know, sometimes when I'm having conversations like this, you know, since it is not our platform, you know what I'm saying? We're not in deep control. So there have been some quirks that have happened. But, hey, we're going to continue on. You know, I'm going to continue to do what I have to do regardless of who damn platform it is. You know, the truth must be told. You know, the voice of liberation must be spoken. It has to happen. We need to do this. So, Brother Sam, what is your participation with the, I know I said you're one of the MCs.
Yes, sir. I'm an MC at the convention next week.
Right on.
But I'm also MCing and coordinating a youth forum.
Okay.
That's taking place on Sunday night, Sunday the 18th.
Okay.
Between 6:30 and 8:30 and so. With that program, we're highlighting youth between the ages, I would say the teenage years up until about the mid-30s or so.
Okay.
So it's actually a youth and young adult event just to really highlight the spectrum of perspectives on our situation as African people, you know, among Generation Z, which is the younger cohort.
Is that what they call it? Is that what they call it, the Generation Z, those who are like in their teen years or early 20s? That's what they call it, Generation Z?
Yes, sir. Those are the youth who grew up with just social media. They were immersed in it from the very beginning.
Okay. You know, and that's kind of, it can be problematic because within social media, all the trappings of it, if you're not, keenly aware and astute and your mind is not strong, you can easily fall prey and victim within the social media. You know, to me, it can be truly a blessing because of the ability to disseminate information. And it could be a curse because the information that you might be getting, you know, can really be detrimental. So, but we need that because to me there, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there is no division. There is no young people, old people. It's just us. And we need each other, you know,
Understood. You know, I think social media has really divided us at the same time. It's a tool that could be utilized a whole lot better. But the danger in it is that people have their own echo chambers. And, you know, around this whole convention, you know, I often look to one of my barbers who tells me, you know, don't really get too caught up on who is questioning the credibility of what we're espousing here, you know, Pan-African federalism. And, you know, I go on social media and, you know, that's often what we have to deal with, you know, divergent views, people who might not understand that, you know, the two options before us aren't what we deserve, you know, and you have people who are caught up in just what's happening in the mainstream. So while social media does have that danger, it's also been an organizing tool, but people are caught up in their silos. It's because of social media that I understand, you know, how much of a dire situation that we're in as African people, just the amount of ignorance that's out there in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the youth presentation will help, you know, further show that disconnect. I'm of the understanding, and I theorize oftentimes that the disconnect happened with Generation X, you know, mm-hmm. those being the adults who are in, who are either approaching their 50s or in their early 50s. I feel like at some point in time during the 90s and early 2000s, you know, especially with, you know, crack cocaine taking over, the bling bling hip hop era, and, you know, this whole pivot to integration, like when integration took over, even when you saw the programming, you know, the in the programming geared towards black people, the main characters were always aspirational, you know. So like they wore suits, they went to the corporate jobs, they had the cars, they were living, you know, a life, you know, that somebody who would go on that route could only get, you know. So a lot of like media was very aspirational for black people. And, you know, not to even mention Barack Obama coming into office, right? And he was one who weaponized social media. You know, I think that a lot of what we're seeing Trump doing is because of the platform, the groundwork that the Obama campaign machine laid in terms of really fostering an identity online and weaponizing it to galvanize the masses. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing that's happening right now. And the reason why it's so pivotal is because, you know, there was already a disconnect intergenerationally within our community, and living in a capitalist society where you have to choose between your time and keeping the roof over your head, we're disconnected now. You know, I remember coming up with my father, you know, on the way to school, we always spoke to one another. I couldn't imagine that happening right now with the earphones mm-hmm. and the phones mm-hmm. and kids on the, you know, there's no time for exchange. You know, a lot of the youth are listening to, you know, the trap music in their silos, you know, and I'm not one to criticize trap music. I got a very eclectic palette, you know, so I listen okay. to trap. Okay. I listen to reggae, you know, so I'm not one to, you know, admonish young people. But what I will say is the reason why I got a palette like that was because even though my parents criticized my music, I still listen to their music. There's not much of that opportunity anymore.
Well, you know, the history of our people in terms of music and different genres, there was always some criticism. But we also knew as African people that music has the ability to uplift us. But exactly. also, too, if the music that is being played can also degrade and demean and bring us down. So like you just mentioned exactly. trap music. Is trap music conscious at all? I mean, I don't know trap music, you know.
No problem. I could explain it briefly. Trap music is not conscious at all. Trap music. So the way that the hip hop industry went over the years, you had your conscious rappers, of course, back in the '80s, and then N.W.A. came on the scene. That was anti-police music, but at the same time, it was a gangster genre.
Right.
That the Jewish music industry, you know, I would say that, you know, they monetized that and they made that, you know, what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Trap music sort of emerged, I would say, during my adolescence, like in the 2000s. And the progression was from speaking about police brutality and speaking against drug use to documenting your documenting your accounts of drug trafficking and things like that. So when you're talking about trap music, that's like Southern hip hop music where like you're documenting what you're doing as a drug dealer. And now it's gotten to the point where the kids have aspired from being drug dealers to now they're drug users.
Yeah.
So the trap music has taken a tone and you'll see with like auto tune and with the drill sound, with the 808s, it's become
So it's further entrapped the minds of our people.
Right.
So trap much. Music is just, man, okay. Okay.
And you know, I'm saying I don't admonish young people for it because mm-hmm. like I've seen the progression and you know, in order to understand them and where they're coming from, you sort of have to I just know that these young people, like they've seen a lot of, they've been disappointed a lot in their lives, you know. And, you know, of course, Dolores Tucker was on point when she criticized Tupac.
Yeah.
And I know, like a lot of old heads that I talked to.
Yeah.
They said over the years, like they've had to change their heart, you know. But we also got to look at control of the industry and the policy mm-hmm. issues that really. That really made it possible, you know. The prison industrial complex took away a whole generation of men and women, you know, left them by themselves.
There was a there's like, there was a piece that went out some time ago, and I can't see other people on my board. So if you're on the board, and only one I'm seeing is Sam. If you could do me a favor and hang up and call back, so I can see you on the board and acknowledge you and get you in to ask any questions, comments, or concerns, I would appreciate it. There was a piece that I heard many years ago, and I remember listening to Sister Soulja saying that if you don't have a gangster piece, because they ain't buying conscious rap. They don't want to right. Promote and push a rap that talks about coming together and loving one another and supporting one another and dealing with the issues that affect. No, they want to talk about selling drugs, calling each other bitches and hoes, right. Drinking and so forth. And she said that's. And then I heard this piece about this, there was a meeting of these rhetoric executives, the European Jews that control and dominated, along with other institutions, particularly the criminal justice institutions, saying that we're going to put this music out there. We're going to have them coming at each other, and we're going to begin to. Yeah. And that's when private prisons begin to happen, and because the whole idea of private prisons is to fill them up and get money. They've even put some judges in prison because that's all they were doing. Anybody that came before them, they was giving them time like it was lunch because they were getting paid by the private prisons. Yes, go ahead.
Brothers, could I chime in here?
Yes, please do.
This really touches close to my heart.
Please do.
Because I see myself as a musicologist, and I really respect what both you and Sam have said. But we have to go back to the ancient times of Tahuti, the principle of polarity, the opposites. And the system of white terrorism recognizes that music on a positive level, lyrically as well as musically, uplifts us. So what they did is reverse it. And the wrecking industry deliberately institutionalized a play down for signing artists where they wanted to make sure that the messages that came out were derogatory and negative.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to speak on behalf of the positive artists that are now self-reliant, because Sam is absolutely correct and you are correct. Y'all remember that record, Headed for Self-Destruction?
Yeah, I play it.
Yeah.
I play it all the time. Yeah.
So a lot of our young brothers and sisters who were striving to kick the positive music recognized what the wrecking industry was doing and tried to warn us. Mm-hmm. But because of capitalism and because of the fact, like Sam said, artists want to get paid, they signed away their righteous music and turned it into negative music. And I don't want to just jump on that generation, Sam, and I'm going to stop. Every generation, even my generation, when I was growing up, and Oshie knows what I'm talking about, when we had soul music, it was the same kind of energy.
Yeah.
And the same thing with jazz. I mean, they recognize that culture binds us. Arts and culture binds traditional African people. So what they did, just like taking away the drum, they did was do everything they could to keep us away from rhythm, yet they buy music and they listen to our music, and they recognize, though, that if our music is uplifting for us, that the gig will be up with them instilling their negative direction. I'm going to stop on that point because we need to recognize that.
Yeah.
And we also need to recognize that the record industry has never been about us. Hollyweird has never been about us.
That's right. And that's why, and what's ironic about that, we keep crying about it and asking that they do something. Damn it.
And it ain't going to happen.
No.
Yeah, that.
The closer we got was Black Panther. And
That wasn't even. Black Panther wasn't neoliberal. Black Panther was a neoliberal. It was close.
Yeah.
It was a start, but
no, you're right, Sam.
I predicted that people were never going to go beyond what they saw in Black Panther to really identify as Africans in North America. That was disheartening. Like the fact that a CIA agent to take down his brother, and then after that form a nonprofit, the messaging is very deep. It's very deep.
Well, brother Chadwick Boseman, rest his soul, where he rest in paradise, he said himself that in conversation that T'Challa, his character, was the enemy. His character, not Killmonger, his character was the enemy. You know.
So y'all, you know, we definitely on point. I remember I said closer to. I didn't say it was there. It ain't.
Oh yeah, I understand.
We not there.
I understand.
Yeah.
But the reality is that's the closest we will ever get in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I hear you, Sam, and I don't want to take up. I did a lot of reasoning earlier, and I really appreciate you, Sam. You know how I feel about you, man, here in D.C.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, we could look at go-go music here in D.C., Sam, and see the same thing. It was one time go-go was used to take girls off the street, and now it's just a bit of it, bam, and it's African music.
Yeah.
You know, but we have different levels of it. I grew up on go-go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're going to class on that, too, because you know me. I'm a bounce beat connoisseur, so man, sure.
Well, I got a brother.
You know, Sam. Earlier, I told Brother Oshi that we got our brother Ross Ledge, who is very supportive of the Pan African Fellas movement, who has what he calls Rego, a mixture of the legacy of Bob Marley and Chuck Brown.
Right on,
Brown. And he's kicking it from Ghana, and he's gonna be showcased.
Right on. What day is that?
Well, actually, they're going to open up with Bob Marley and that, brother. And then they're going to play stuff all throughout the conference.
Okay.
But what we want to do is to show people what we're talking about. Because there are young artists doing positive music, but they don't get airplay. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is reaching to the positive energy in the artists. Because like Sam said, it's a disconnect. It's designed to keep us disconnected.
Right.
And I'm with you, Oshie. I see myself as a youth advocate, brother.
Yes.
When I was in my 20s, I'm still a youth advocate. I'll be a youth advocate as long as I live.
That's right.
We ain't doing for our youth. We're not looking to the future or the present.
That's
but anyway,
right.
Let me stop on that point.
Let me get one of my callers in. Let me get a caller in. 646.
Oh,
646,
sure.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Oshie, and to your guests, man. A beautiful, beautiful conversation. Anytime you have a brother could call in and talk about Wakanda on that level, man, you know what's going on. Because this Negro team will lose their mind if you say anything about Wakanda in the message, in the movie. But, you know, the funny thing is, why do we ever expect white folks to give us anything that's nurturing, loving, caring, and good for our soul as a people? You know what I mean? I mean, if you look at music and the way music represents us right now culturally, you would think that we have a serious class of degenerates going on. I mean, you know, I'm biased because I grew up probably, to me, in the best era of music, the 70s and the 80s. I mean, you know, if you just take three artists in the 70s and you look at the work that they produce, you could take that work today and it is still be palatable to how we move forward as a people.
Oh,
you take Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, still very relevant.
Take Stevie.
Mm-hmm.
You take Curtis Mayfield. Mm-hmm. You could take, you know, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding. And if you ask yourself today to name you artists that could produce that type of development, it wouldn't be in media the way those brothers were. You know what I mean? Because it was a whole different time. Now we, as a community and as a people, make one mistake as far as I'm concerned, musically, with our children. We don't sit down and educate them.
Exactly.
Or what we grew up on.
Exactly.
And show them the comparison to what's being given to us today, not only rhythmically, but lyrically. If you sit down with your kids and you do that, let me tell you something. They'll have a much honest and better perspective on how they move forward as a human being than just being given the nonsense that's being spilled today. So I just say this. Sit down every day or if you can't do it every day, every weekend for an hour or two with your kid and play Stevie, Aretha, play some Miles, play some Coltrane, and then play the foolishness, not too much of it, but enough of the foolishness to show them the comparison, and man, you'll really put your kids on the right track. And you got to mix it with
But let me help you the same when you get a chance.
With your Migos.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Jay.
Let me help you the same, because that's a very good assessment that you made, but there's one missing piece, right? A lot of these grandmothers today are 40 and under in most cases.
Yeah.
A lot of our parents are teens. I'm an uncle. I don't have any kids of my own. I'm an uncle to legions of kids, nieces and nephews, man. Some of their parents are younger than me.
Yeah.
And some of their parents are about my age. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we ain't passing down a reefer. You know, we ain't, you know, in some cases, a lot of these parents, their palate is not even, you know, diverse.
On that level, consciousness. Yeah. That's why I'm saying, you see, I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I don't care. Well, the mistake that we made within the crack generation is now coming back to haunt us just based on the one thing that you said, brother. How the hell do you have a 20-year-old grandmother? And then the thing is, what makes it worse is the 40-year-old grandmother, her mother is a bigger fool than she is. But people don't, we in our community don't want to address that. Because when, I don't know how old you are, brother, but I'm 56. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the thing is, I come from a generation before the crack epidemic hit. Once the crack epidemic hit, it just destroyed us as a people. But remember, right, my generation, our parents were the children of those who just started coming out of Jim Crow, who were having kids during the civil rights movement.
Right.
And they were getting decent jobs, buying homes. And the objective, honestly, of a parent is to make your child better than you. And what happened was, my generation, we just missed it, but then our kids got caught up in that crap nonsense, and it just destroyed us. To the point to where we're at now, and we just starting to recover, some of us. And you know what the sad thing is? Now the whites are becoming degenerates. So when the whites become degenerates,
they've been there, man. They've been there.
They've been degenerates, but see, it's different. I'll do a perfect quick example. At one time, I was driving as a chauffeur and a cab driver, and I used to always get rich white kids and their parents in the morning. And let me tell you something. I always knew they were nothing. But sitting in the car with them and seeing how stupid they was and caught up in just absolutely nonsense, that's why you have the white degeneracy today that can't move forward, that's not doing the necessary things to do what their parents were trying to place them in the position of, protecting whiteness and growing whiteness. That's why you got the problems in this country that we do, because we as African people haven't figured out that we in a lot of ways are in the best position we ever could be to manipulate and dominate this cracker, but we got leadership that want us to do one thing, integrate with this cracker.
Well, listen, Jay, I'm going to get back to Sam because I want to find out more and have the listeners find out more about what's going to be offered this coming next weekend for the Pan-African Federalist Movement's conference or convention, October 15th.
One question, Oshie, is it going to be online?
Yeah.
Are they going to have anything for people that can't make it to the conference?
No,
like
this is
Truman
all. Right,
or
right.
Anything?
Right, this is virtual. So just hang on and I'm going to be announcing it for the next couple of days prior to the conference. This is going to be on Zoom, and how you can register for the conference. That information will be provided. I have done that already the last couple of days. So, yes, Jay, so you can be a part of that. It's going to be dynamic. It really is. Brother Sam or Brother
yes,
Sangor,
sir.
Either one of you can give that information out again on what's happening.
So you go to Eventbrite, eventbrite.com/NAPFC, North Africa Pan-African Federalist Convention, NAPFC. That's so eventbrite.com/NAPFC. And what we're talking about are tangible. So for real, honestly, like baseline participation, if you're Pan-Africanist minded, if you have the mindset that right now the situation that we're in is not the ideal situation, then you should be here. Because you are of the understanding that sovereignty is the only way that we can prosper as African people, and that we need control of every aspect of our lives, and we need to be unified with the rest of the diaspora. That's the baseline requirement for participation. Because during this convention, we are discussing tangible solutions in the context of what will our place be when Africa unites politically, right? So at this point, it's not a question of if we will unite politically and why we should unite. It's a question of what does unification look like on a technical, tangible level. And in bringing back the youth, that's a key piece that has always been missing within the youth. No, not even within the youth, a key piece that the youth have seen missing in discussions with the elders. Because, you know, elders oftentimes, and I respect it a lot, I'm a history buff. You know, history and English were my strongest, you know, subjects in school because, like, I was always told to read and I had a curious mind. So, like, I can chart, you know, events in the context of, like, major policy being passed and wars and things like that. That's my stuff. You hear me? But, like, when it comes down to, like, actualizing things and, you know, actually seeing tangible results of organizing, a lot of youth in my conversations with them say that they're frustrated and they feel like oftentimes it's just a lot of talking rather than action going on. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to be nuanced in saying that it's the elders and their excitement to see us. They are often dropping knowledge, you know, but I think that the youth also have ideas about what it means to take things right. forward and to right. create a paradigm that brings in the ancient knowledge but reflects the situations of today. So in order for us to pass the baton, we got to pretty much find a common understanding about what it is that what we've been talking about is going to look like, because Garveyism isn't going to look the same today as it did yesterday. I don't see millions of people, you know, rallying around us right now. For real, honestly, I think that we should be prepared to be the minority for the time being. You know, like, and I understand that goes against campaigning, but I also understand as a history buff that when we did try to go for everybody, there were folks in the grass, you know, working with the COINTELPRO people.
Right.
You understand? So, there were people that were very divisive. So now the landscape is even, like, it's even tighter than before. People are scared into being integrationists. We don't have time necessarily for, you know, to try to court everybody. But what I will say is that within the Pan-Africanist bubble, we need to become more united. We need to become more intergenerational and more understanding. And that only happens once youth are listened to and new systems are put in place. And we have a chance in visualizing and actualizing what that means for us. And one more key point, you know, before I let y'all speak, forgive me. A key part of that for youth is economics. A lot of youth are very, very, you know, caught up on economics. And that's not a bad thing at all, because oftentimes lack of economic infrastructure has been our downfall, right? So how is it that we can organize economically and build something where they're not even economics, family planning. A lot of youth, given the trauma that we've experienced, we're into family planning. So what does nationhood look like in fostering families, strong youth? Strong economically viable communities where people have a chance at advancing themselves and working for themselves, right? And monetizing their talents, right? So these are tangible discussions that we're having. Once North America becomes included in the United African States, are there opportunities for us to take what we got here back to the motherland and develop economically? And I'll leave it there.
All right.
That's an excellent point, Sam. I'm not going to be long, Oshi. That's very important, Sam, what you just said, because that's one of the major problems we have. And when we were divided, we were not just divided geographically. We were divided intergenerationally. Mm-hmm. And so it is critical that the elders recognize that we've been at this for a long time, but change is inevitable. And with young minds, I spoke to it earlier, Sam, you didn't hear it. I spoke a little bit about BASANI, the Black Star Action Network International, which is made up primarily of young people 40 and under. I happen to be the international coordinator because they respect me, because they feel that I listen to them. But it's not about me, he or she, it's about we, as Sam said, and it's about us as elders and leaders who know, listening to young brothers and sisters who are more African-centered and are more focused. And we don't need a lot of people. I mean, Marcus Garvey, when people talk about Garvey, they always like to talk about the heyday. But as one who served as president general for 8 years, I want to tell you that we can get more work done with thorough Garveyites who understand and on the same page than we can with a lot of people who are disjointed. And then you have to struggle around ideology, philosophy, et cetera. So what you said, Sam, is critical. We are building a structure that can represent the many, but we don't need the many to come to create disorganization, to create dissension and fighting one another. We need love amongst us. And too often I've seen it. A lot of numbers of people don't get nothing done. Brother A.P. DeBailey has reminded us, when he worked with Malcolm, that you don't need a lot of people to get the real work done, build the structures and build the movement, but it's to serve the many people. And once you start serving people, people will be more respectful about our differences, and then they will be more able to support the common objective going forward. I'm going to stop on that point, Oshie.
I say. All right, we have another caller, 267. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie. I want to say good afternoon to your two guests. I want to thank them for talking about solutions instead of talking about the open enemy. But, you know, the brothers brought up a very, very important topic in the first hour. Brother Sangor, I believe that's his name.
Yes.
He said about a military. Now, even in that fictitious, I'm going to call it fictitious, movie, The Black Panther, Wakanda had a military. So you have to have some might to put anything in action against these people that we call beasts today. I mean, you absolutely have to have something of defending any movement against them. Number two, I do agree with what the other brother said. We only need a small percentage of us to get these things intact. And I was listening to Brother Jay, and he's absolutely right. That epidemic, that crack epidemic, set us back a little bit. But, you know, I'm going to take the words of Marcus Garvey. I mean, because a lot of people quote him, but they don't quote a lot of things that he said. He said it is not his intention to take all Negroes back to Africa. There are some that are no good here, and there'll be no good over there.
That's right.
Now, Marcus Garvey said that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to be realist about any strategic matter that we're discussing. Yes, COINTELPRO is real. You know, the Negro that, and you know, and the thing about it, I'm going to say this. A lot of our people, any movement has to really, and if we want to really show love to our people, then we got to show a way for these people to eat. Because if they're not eating and they don't have a way to live, then of course we're going to have shootouts in our neighborhood. Of course we're going to be, you know, just against one another. Because this is a brutal economical system. And I learned this in Economics 101 back in St. Joe's College in 1977. they said the way capitalism works, you have to have a permanent underclass.
And that's what we've been designated.
We have to break that. Mm. We got to break that and make sure that we're not that people. Because right now they're bringing immigrants in here telling them that we're their permanent underclass. We got to break that. Yeah. We got to break that. So, you know, I agree with a lot of the solutions that these two brothers are bringing. I'm glad they're on because I get tired of hearing conversations. Trump and these enemies of ours. Yeah. They're all enemies. They're all enemies. I just had to call and give my my 5 cents.
Right on.
Brothers, and I'm going to continue listening.
Wise words, brother.
Thank
you. Hold up.
Thank you, brother.
So your point about the immigrants, right? So your point about immigrants real quick, right? So I'm speaking as a first-generation so-called American. You know, I identify as a West African. My family is from Liberia, West Africa, right? I tell anybody when it comes to this whole question of who's an African, you know, regardless of what happened, whether you repatriated, whether you, you know, were put in the Middle Passage or you came yesterday, you're African because of your DNA and because of your connection to the ancestors. You know, a lot of what we are talking about as Pan-Africanists is metaphysical and beyond the understanding of anybody who is still married to the liberal conservative paradigm of the United States of America. And I will go even further, right, in saying that, you know, the downfall of the whole African people was being beholden to the nationalistic borders imposed on us by our colonial masters or the colonial terrorists, right? Because you have African immigrants, right, who can't quite wrap it around their head that Africans in North America who are here for generations are identifying as Africans. And, you know, because of the ignorance, they are becoming enemies of the cause as well, which is why I'm of the understanding that as a first-generation American, once again so-called, that of the first-generation Americans, as well as Pan-Africanists on the continent, have to work together in bridging that understanding and letting them know that, hey, listen, you might be a so-called continental, but you guys are still learning French in your schools. Mm-hmm. You guys have a curriculum. Right? Yep. You guys still pay money to the French every year. So don't talk to us about not being African. In some ways, y'all disconnected too.
Oh, no doubt.
So we need to, for real, that's a conversation that people need to have because, you know, once again, I tell people, put respect on the name of Africans in North America. Like, there's no question, you know, and that is a battle that we've been fighting for generations, and the system imposed that on us through ways of naturalization laws. It's a whole indoctrination process to become naturalized as a U.S. citizen. You understand? And a lot of continental Africans and black immigrants in general, they take that very seriously because they don't understand, right, the puppet masters that were at hand that accelerated the civil conflicts in their home countries. So we have Africans, right, leaving the continent, imposing a brain drain. We have a whole bunch of movement that is forced around society. And all in all, we hate each other more and more because we don't understand that the puppet masters were the ones that created these conditions. Mm-hmm. We talk about crabs in a barrel, but we never criticize the person that brought the barrel in the first place
and put the crabs in. Listen, we don't have that too much time. We only got about less than 10 minutes. So I just want to make sure that our listeners, although I'll be promoting it consistently up until the time that the conference happens, and hopefully maybe get Brother Mstada to come on. Maybe I know he's busy, but hopefully maybe Monday or Wednesday next week, if he can come on, that would be great so we can further pump it up. Because to me, this is very important. This is very important. It is just as important as when they had the Bang Dung Conference, when they had the Pan-African conferences of years gone back with Du Bois and so forth. This is just as important. In fact, to me, I consider it even more important in light of what we're experiencing globally and what's happening to African people. You know, there needs to be a voice. There needs to be a movement. A serious movement on the continent throughout the diaspora of Africans coming together. Dr. Clark said, we have no friends. Everywhere we are dogged out. Everywhere we are, we have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. Not how your hair is curled or your eyebrows arch. No, like who you see historically. Like who you see culturally. Believe in yourself and then exemplify that by believing in each other and trusting and working with one another. The time is now. The future is uncertain. You know, I remember as a young person when I first started gaining consciousness back in the 60s and reading the autobiography of Malcolm X and then marching out of school for Black History. And I mean, a number of things. I've always been that. I mean, I got kind of hung up in the 70s and 80s, but because I was a firefighter, I think that helped me regain consciousness because I could read at the firehouse. And I began to read and I began to read. And then I started going to conferences and so forth, became a member of ASCAC, became a member of the National Black United Front, became a member of whatever I could. And to understand that through this conscious raising, that not just myself, but all of us, we need each other. We need to respect mm-hmm. each other. We need our sisters. We need our families. You know, I always say that the reason why we have such a chaotic community, because we don't have a community. We don't have a neighborhood. We just got a hood. We ain't, because we sure mm-hmm. the hell ain't neighborly. It's because we've lost that, you know. And the fact that we're in America, and America's about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America perpetuates. And unfortunately, we fall prey to that. And we have been manipulated and undermined. And so we continue to strive and believe that somehow, some way, that we can appeal to these people morally. You know, that was the problem that King had up until the time that he realized when he told Harold Belafonte, I got a feeling I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building.
That's right.
You know, we can't appeal to these people more. They are amoral. They don't give a damn. And the fact that they've imposed a religion that they don't even believe in, only to the fact that it's imagery, it's iconography, it's them. Mm-hmm. And they've imposed it on us, and damn it, we believe it. We believe it's them. You know, so this conference coming up next weekend is very key. And I'm hoping that it continues to build because, like we're saying, it needs to happen now. So we don't have time to, you know, to lollygag and, you know, and mess around. We got to get busy. We have to get busy. And it's not, of course, about us here. It is about us as Africans all over, you know, but particularly on the continent, because that is our base. That is our homeland. That is our land. You see, so I'm hoping that the Africans all over begin to, you know, chime in. And I know there's, like I said earlier, Brother Sam, there are other activities that are happening next week. You know, I've mentioned them. I know Baba Baruti and Sister Yabruti, they're involved in the prophecy, something like that. I can't remember the title of it. But there's another conference, which, of course, is a virtual conference happening next weekend. I think there's something else happening. And that's cool. You know, one of the things that these virtual conferences have as that is an advantage for brothers and sisters who are seeking knowledge is that you can attend many of them in that weekend, you know, because it's not at a physical place. It's virtual. So it ain't like, you know, you got to drop $300 on registration fees and hotel fees. No, you just chime in on it. You get in on it. And if you want to go somewhere else, you do that. But the bottom line is that we as African people need to come together. Let me give you some closing remarks, Brother Sangor.
Yeah, I just want to say real quickly, I appreciate the show. I think it's very, very uplifting. I want to remind people that they can attend. That's great. But I want to remind people we're mobilizing and organizing. So we're going to record and we're going to keep track of what everybody is doing. And we're going to continue to organize. So this is not the end of anything. And it's not the beginning. We're in the middle of raising up the consciousness of brothers and sisters of the need to unite at home and abroad.
Right on, Brother Sam.
Yes. Closing remarks. What I would say is that we are about serious business, and we should be ready to discuss calmly and systemically about what it is that we expect as North, as Africans living in North America. And I will go further in saying that do not be beholden to any government except for the government of your family and of your nation, of your people, of your community, because that is true Pan-Africanism. We are in a society right now that is colonized in all corners. We got AFRICOM on the continent. We got militarized police here.
Right.
So we got to be very astute on all fronts, especially militarily and educationally. We got to support the African Center schools. We got to organize everybody that has created an independent venture underneath something politically. You know, Kwame Nkrumah said it. So, you know, if you got Google a speech of his, you know, that he gave, one of his most famous speeches, you know, in terms of like what it means for us to unite politically. Political unification undergirds all other facets of the Pan-African experience.
That's right.
Because once you understand, once you organize politically, then you're creating a system. Everybody's already creating their own system, but how do we organize? That's the question. How do we organize, right? And how do we organize here and with those on the continent and those around the world, and who do we organize as?
Right on.
So once we start identifying as Africans and organizing politically, then the next question becomes, all right, is this even a political system that we going to, you know, organize under? Or, you know, do we take on more indigenous customs, attitudes, and traditions? Like, that's how deeply we're talking here. This is a step back to where we were before they even shifted this whole thing. And I'll leave it there.
Right on. Brothers and sisters, I want to thank the brothers and sisters from the Pan-African Federalist Movement of North America, the upcoming conference next weekend, October 15th through the Monday, October 19th. Hope you can listen. It's on Zoom. I'll be giving that information out on the next few programs. Got some good people on there on the panel. You know, Malcolm's daughter, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Peter Bailey, who worked with Malcolm, and of course, my good brother and friend, Renoka Rashidi. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they shown in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day, a great weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a great and wonderful weekend. Peace, family.